Hi, Dave Emery here. This is For the Record, program number 1084, The Turner Diaries, Leaderless Resistance, and the Internet. This is being recorded on August 20th of the year 2019. In this program, we are going to resume and restate some information from our last show and from some previous programs, and we are also going to point toward information to be counted in future programs. We have been speaking, among other things, about the foundational elements and the networks underlying, among others, AOC, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, someone that I think was deliberately elevated to a position of prominence within the so-called progressive sector, specifically as part of a political psyop, as part of a political operation. As I have said before, almost from the very get-go, I took a look at her and said, wow, a Latina, and the Trump administration is fundamentally bigoted against Latinos and, in fact, has been using migrants, quote, illegal immigrants, unquote, as a fairly effective political football. She also brands herself as a democratic socialist, and Trump has been very vocal about talking about how the Democrats are socialists. And along with her fellow members of the squad, chiefly Ilhan Omar and Ms. Talib, she has been not only very present in the media. Now, bear in mind, these are all first-term congressional representatives, and yet they have dominated the media spotlight. That is the same media spotlight we looked at in our long series of interviews with Jim DiGiamio about Destiny Betrayed and the Jim Garrison investigation. That media establishment is inextricably linked not only with the intelligence services, but with covert operation and swinging American public opinion in the direction that is desired by the powers that be. We have also been examining the foundational element underneath Ms. Ocasio-Cortez, chiefly Sekhat Chakrabarty, although he has now recently resigned as her chief of staff. He was formerly her campaign manager, and his resignation comes under a cloud. He is apparently being investigated for setting up some highly questionable financial entities that have drawn money from some super PACs or from some political action committees set up on behalf of Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. As noted in our last two shows, not only is Ms. Cortez's CV questionable and in places, frankly, fraudulent, but the forces underlying her, chiefly Team Chakrabarty, are frankly more than a little suspect. Not only does Chakrabarty come from Bridgewater Associates, the world's largest hedge fund and a major financial, a major venture capital source for Palantir, which is the alpha predator of the surveillance landscape or the surveillance jungle. Evidence suggests that Sekhat Chakrabarty may very well be an associate, a professional associate of Peter Thiel, a key Trump backer, one who absolutely rejects democracy, does not think women should be allowed to vote. And it is more than a little interesting, as I noted, that Chakrabarty is of Indian extraction. I don't mean Native American. He is a Bengali American, and he did a YouTube segment wearing a T-shirt with his apparent political idol, Subhas Chandra Bose, nicknamed the Duce of Bengal, an Indian fascist who networked with Hitler, Mussolini, Heinrich Himmler, the Emperor of Japan, and Prime Minister General Hideki Tojo. If Sekhat Chakrabarty were what he professes to be, he would have been wearing maybe a Gandhi T-shirt, not Subhas Chandra Bose. I would note that in addition to being a major venture capital source for Palantir and the largest hedge fund in the world, Bridgewater Associates had as its general counsel none other than James Comey, who went from there to being head of the FBI, where his intercession at the last minute on behalf of the email non-scandal vis-a-vis Hillary Clinton helped to swing that very, very close election to Donald Trump, although Hillary Clinton got almost 3 million more votes, a total of 77,000 votes in three key states. I hope to give Donald Trump the electoral victory.
You're listening to Dave Emery's For the Record. Long article-length descriptions of the For the Record programs are available at spitfirelist.com, also featuring information that wasn't in the original program due to the limitations of time.
Before we review some elements about what I think is an ongoing immigrant or illegal immigration psyop, and I suspect that AOC is part of that. Trump, again, has been very vocal against AOC and also against Ilhan Omar and Ms. Tlaib, and they have really become, to a large extent, the face of the Democratic Party, despite the fact that the Democratic Party's retaking of Congress or the House of Representatives in the 2018 midterm elections was due to the election of moderates in districts that have been sympathetic to Trump. It was not due to the Bernie bots or the AOCs or any of those people at all. And yet, if this continues, I think Donald Trump may very well be returned to office, because the media have been absolutely complicit in elevating AOC, Ilhan Omar et al. Into the limelight. We'll perhaps get into Ms. Omar in a future show. I would note that the activities of these first-term congressional representatives have been on the national and international stage, and they have been promoting policies and or making statements that serve to divide the Democratic Party and to destabilize it. And I believe that is exactly the goal. As I am recording this on August 20th of 2019, Ms. Omar and Ms. Tlaib are garnering attention because they have been barred from entering Israel, and Ms. Omar is calling for an end to U.S. aid for Israel, and Trump is partnering very closely with the Netanyahu regime, and the Netanyahu regime, make no mistake about it, is a manifestation of, and the political heir to, the fascist element within the Zionist movement. And that assessment has been made by many, including, by the way, the former chief of staff of the Israeli Air Force, who observed on Holocaust Remembrance Day in 2014 that what happened in Europe in the 1930s was happening in Israel. And when someone mentions that, as I have, and I'm going to be updating the fascist element in the Zionist movement and Mormon Jews in an upcoming show, God knows when we're going to get to it. There is, by the way, a Food for Thought post on the SpitfireList.com website about the links between ThyssenKrupp Marine Systems and Sheldon Adelson and money laundering in Macau and the Netanyahu regime. We will flesh that out in when we get to an update on that. But suffice it to say that in an attempt to not only divide Jews, the vast three quarters or more of whom voted for the Democratic Party in the last election, Trump, who is, make no mistake about it, a fascist, has partnered with Benjamin Netanyahu, who, make no mistake about it, is a fascist. And then we've got Ilhan Omar and Ms. Tlaib, both of whom have been alleged by Saudi and Qatari intelligence to be Muslim Brotherhood. I suspected almost from the beginning that Ms. Omar was a front person for the Brotherhood. They hooked up with an organization headed up by Hanan Ashrawi, a darling of the so-called progressive political sector, and beyond that, a political protege of James Baker, who was not only George H.W. Bush's chief of staff, but a longtime friend and a campaign backer. Before we get into some review of the immigrant PSYOP, or the illegal immigrant PSYOP, or what I believe are firm indications of that, this exploration, this deep dive into AOC and Team Bose and Mr. Chakrabarty has also been educational for me as well. I had suspected an Indian fascist connection to the rise of AOC almost from the beginning. Donald Trump and Steve Bannon are very close to and admiring of the BJP and the RSS and the Hindutva fascists in power in India at the moment. And there is a strong right-wing Hindu element in the U.S. that backs them as well. Narendra Modi has come full on with Subhas Chandra Bose revisionism in India. And I had known about Subhas Chandra Bose. I did not realize how vital and contemporary Boseian revisionism was. And as I reviewed a tape segment from early 1985 from AFA program number 7 that figured in For the Record program number 1068, I recognized something that I did not pick up on then. Now, first of all, let's talk about Saraya Kumar Bose and the Indo-German Association. S.K. Bose and other was teamed with people who were associates of his grand uncle, I should say, great uncle. Saraya Kumar Bose is the grandnephew and a political acolyte of Subhas Chandra Bose, apparently as is Sekhat Chakrabarty, who is the driving force behind AOC. And as noted in the article from the Hindu Business Line of July 17th of 2015, from article by Regimi, R-A-G-I-M-I, Bhuyan, B-H-U-Y-A-N, Legacy Wrapped in a Mystery, S.K. Bose is head of the Indo-German Association, or the Deutsche Indische Gesellschaft, or D-I-G. Saraya, who has a software consultancy business in Hamburg and is president of the Indo-German Association. More about that organization from that same article. The DIG, that's Deutsche Indische Gesellschaft, was set up on September 11th, 1942 by Subhas Chandra Bose at the Hotel Atlanta in Hamburg. Bose recounts adding that the DIG today is the largest bilateral organization in Germany with 27 branches. As a consultant, he often guides Germans keen on working in the booming Indian IT sector. He is also a founder and member of the German-Indian Roundtable, an informal gathering that seeks to further mutual business interests. And as noted in our series of 1061 through 1068, there was a book of Beacon, I think it's called Beacon 4 or Beacon 2 Asia, and it is co-authored by S.K. Bose and a guy named Alexander Werth, and it was written with wartime associates from Germany and Japan of Subhas Chandra Bose, and Beacon Across Asia, that is the title of it. And basically it contends that it was Subhas Chandra Bose and not Gandhi who freed India from British rule. And note, the co-author is Alexander Verth. He was the guy, it's W-E-R-T-H, he was the guy who brought Saraya Kumar Bose, the grandnephew of and political acolyte of Subhas Chandra Bose, the Duce of Bengal, to Germany. He also, Alexander Verth, that is, was the German interpreter for Subhas Chandra Bose's Indian Legion. Those were Bose's European fighting forces that were ultimately folded into the Waffen-SS. From that same article, back in the day, Nataji, Subhas Chandra Bose's stay in Germany, had proved instrumental in shaping his struggle. Decades later, that legacy would play a pivotal role in shaping his grandnephew's career. Saraya Kumar Bose came to Germany on the advice of Alexander Verth, again W-E-R-T-H, Nataji's German interpreter in the Indian Legion. Now again, it would be difficult to exaggerate the Indian presence in the high-tech world today, not only in India, but elsewhere as well, including the U.S., and as a foundational element of this entire exploration, the role of high-tech, the role of the Internet, the role of social media in the ascent not only of AOC, but in the entire manifestation of the contemporary political landscape, including key aspects of what I believe is the illegal immigrant psyop, is front and center. While listening to For the Record 1068 and a tape excerpt from AFA program number 7, I came to quite a realization. I had talked about the German Indian Association, or the DIG, again, founded by Subhas Chandra Bose in Hamburg, Germany on 9/11/42 during the Second World War, obviously, and spoke about its primary role in German-Indian business relations and in channeling German professionals into Indian high tech. I suspect the presence of Saraya Kumar Bose in the Deutsche Indische Gesellschaft may very well have something to do with Sekhar Chakraborty's sporting that Subhas Chandra Bose t-shirt. Peter Thiel, who may very well be something of a mentor to Sekhar Chakraborty, is from Germany as well, as we have looked at in For the Record 718. What I had overlooked, because it comes through fairly quickly, was that not only was the German Indian Society, or DIG, founded by Subhas Chandra Bose in 1942 in Germany during the war, but in addition to the business contacts between that organization and contemporary Germany and contemporary India, it featured as one of its advisors none other than Admiral Wilhelm Canaris, who was in charge of the Abwehr, German military intelligence during World War II. So the DIG, the German Indian Society, or Deutsche Indische Gesellschaft, is of paramount importance here. Not only an extension and projection of the Indian-German axis through the decades, but in addition to its German-Indian business manifestations and inevitably links to the Bormann Capital Network, it also has been inextricably linked with German intelligence and Admiral Wilhelm Canaris. What we are going to do is to revisit, at one level, AFA 7 from early 1985, and also For the Record 1068, and listen to a reading from the book Spies and Traitors of World War II by Kurt K.U.R.T. Singer, published in hardcover by Prentice Hall in 1945, right after World War II, of the Deutsche Indische Gesellschaft and Subhas Chandra Bose and Admiral Wilhelm Canaris, who was part of this. We hear the following.
As a climax to his European jaunt, he founded the German Indian Society. One of the honorary directors of the new club was none other than Admiral Walter Wilhelm Canaris. Canaris, by the way, was the head of the Abwehr, German military intelligence, at that time. That's an interjection. Continuing with the text, Bose was granted a long interview with that gentleman, who expressed his warm friendliness toward Bose's dream of an independent India. In Berlin, Bose altered many of his ideas. He had completely dropped his pro-Russian feelings. Now he became race-conscious. A stately figure in his oriental robes, he went on conducted tours through Berlin. His guide was an attractive maiden of the Hitler Youth named Ingeborg. She showed him the later bombed-out Pergamon Museum, the Staatsoper, the Potsdam Drive. They conversed on the Nazi theory of the superiority of the Aryan race. India, after all, was the cradle of the Aryan race. Bose was well pleased with this idea. India rightly belonged to the Aryan Axis group of nations. It was a new slogan and would speed the struggle for freedom. Of course, the Nordic maiden who introduced him to the idea had received instructions from Canaris on the topics on which to touch. But that scarcely mattered. The Nazis put him on the air. Bose addressed the Orient from radio stations in Zeissen and Königswusterhausen. He roundly condemned Great Britain and announced the formation of the Aryan Axis.
That began from For the Record 1068 and from AFA program number 7. So note the presence in the Deutsche Indische Gesellschaft, or German Indian Society, of Admiral Wilhelm Canaris, head of the Abwehr.
You're listening to Dave Emery's For the Record. You can subscribe to the comments posted on the SpitfireList.com website, most of them by a brilliant contributing editor who uses the moniker Terra Fractal, specializing, but by no means exclusively, in economic and financial matters.
Now, as I have noted, Donald Trump, like fascists elsewhere in the world, has been making a lot of political hay by scapegoating immigrants for this country's problems. That is unfair. Immigrants are not to blame for the country's problems. However, the so-called progressive sector just does not seem to be able to do much of anything except to react to Team Trump and their counterparts abroad with exactly what Team Trump would like. While immigrants should not be abused at all, and they certainly are not to blame for this country's problems, they aren't the solution to this country's problems either. Just look at the amount of press being devoted to the Dreamers, maybe 800,000 people. When was the last time you heard anyone worrying about Vietnam veterans? There are a lot more Vietnam veterans than there are Dreamers, and yet you hear nothing about the former and a lot about the latter. 69% of registered voters in the U.S. are non-Hispanic whites. And again, just as immigrants are not to blame for this country's problems, and they are being scapegoated in this country and others, as historically has been the case, as we looked at in, among other shows, For the Record program number 1013, Fascism and the Politics of Immigration. By the same token, immigrants aren't the solution either, and decriminalizing illegal entry into the U.S. is not the answer either, particularly not if you're going to have Medicare for all and free college education. Opening up the borders will not work at all. I believe that AOC, again, like Ilhan Omar, like Ms. Tlaib, is actually a ringer. I think that she was elevated by fascist elements associated with Team Trump, people like Peter Thiel, Subhas Chandra, Chakrabarty, and others. She was elevated to ultimately give Donald Trump a second term. She has proved very disruptive and refractory in the Democratic Party. So has Ms. Omar. And these people have been traveling overseas or trying to travel overseas or traveling to the border. What the hell are they doing for their constituencies? These are first-term congressional representatives. 58% of AOC's constituents were in favor of the New York City Amazon deal she opposed it. That is not democratic socialism. Then she shows up at the border. Ilhan Omar now is stirring up the pot along with Ms. Tlaib vis-a-vis Israel and Team Trump's alliance with the Likud fascists in Israel. And that also is working, like AOC and Subhas Chakrabarty promised to do, to basically start a war within the Democratic Party. Ilhan Omar was running around Estonia, of all places. Estonia is going full-on Nazi. They're glorifying the Estonian Legion, part of the Waffen-SS, along with Subhas Chandra Bose's European Fighting Forces. What the hell is she doing? Ilhan Omar, that is, running around Estonia. What is she doing for her constituency? Again, I believe that there is an immigrant psyop at work, or an illegal immigrant psyop. Reviewing quickly, in For the Record program number 1039, we accessed a couple of articles. One, fake Facebook account had role in building immigrant caravan, from Josh Marshall, at Talking Points memo of December 6, 2018. And then there was also a BuzzFeed article from that same day, 12-6-2018. A mysterious imposter account was used on Facebook to drum up support for the migrant caravan by Ken Benziger and Carla Zabludowsky, Zabludowsky. Recall that in the run-up to the 2018 midterm elections, there was a migrant caravan that grew and became a major political football, or propaganda football, for Team Trump and Fox News and allied elements. And that was propelled by a fake Facebook account that was apparently from somewhere other than Honduras, and that was very sophisticated indeed, and showed a degree of targeting that is reminiscent of the Cambridge Analytica targeting in the 2016 election. From those articles, reviewing very quickly, of the role of this fake Facebook account, and again, the role of tech, and so what we talked about in connection with Surveillance Valley by Asher Levine is front and center here. Facebook has admitted the account was an imposter account impersonating a prominent Honduran politician, but it is refusing to release information about the account, who may have set it up, or what country it originated from. In response to a query from BuzzFeed News, a Facebook spokesperson said the phony account, quote, was removed for violating the company's misrepresentation policy, unquote, but declined to share any further information, such as what country it originated from, what email address was used to open it, or any other details that might reveal who was behind it. Facebook added that, barring a subpoena or a request from law enforcement, it does not share such information out of respect for the privacy of its users. This from the company that walked into the Cambridge Analytica affair, by the way, aided by Palantir, eyes open and collaborated wholeheartedly. This is the very essence of hypocrisy. We've done many shows about Facebook. For the Record 718, For the Record 946, For the Record 1021, and For the Record 1074 among them. More about this. Facebook added that, skipping on, Fuentes, the one of the activists in whose name the fade, this is Bartolo Fuentes, a Honduran politician and human rights activist. Fuentes said he believes it is important to find out who was behind the rogue account, but hasn't gotten any answers from Facebook. Quote, who knows how many messages could have been sent and who received them, unquote. Fuentes has been unable to get any information from Facebook about the account, but one small detail did stand out. Whoever created it listed the Honduran capital of Tegucigalpa as Fuentes' hometown, rather than the San Pedro Sula suburb of El Progreso. That might seem like a minor error, but it is the sort of mistake a foreigner, not a Honduran, would make about the well-known former lawmaker whose left-wing party stands in opposition to the current president's administration. The account operated entirely in Spanish and precisely targeted influencers within the migrant rights community. Sounds very much like Cambridge Analytica. And rather than criticize or undermine the caravan, as other online campaigns would later attempt to do, it was used to legitimize the event, making a loosely structured grassroots event appear to be a well-organized effort by an established migrant group with a proven track record of successfully bringing Central American people to the U.S. border. Only after the account kicked in, only after the account kicked into gear did enthusiasm and participation for the caravan spike. The account also claimed falsely that the caravan was being led by a migrant rights organization called Pueblo Sin Fronteras. Later, once the caravan swelled to a massive scale, the Pueblo Sin Fronteras did get involved, though, in a support rather than a leadership role. It appears that the account helped the caravan gain key momentum to the point where its size became a self-fulfilling prophecy, spurring even more to join and groups which hadn't been supported to get involved. Quote, "It's hard to believe one Facebook account could play that decisive a role, but the account seems to have been sophisticated, and it is equally difficult to believe that a sophisticated operator or organization would have gone to such trouble and limited their efforts to a single imposter account." I don't believe they did. And I suspect that Juanita of Arc, she of social media prominence AOC, is not only being used as an icon, basically. Illegal immigrants are us for the Democratic Party, but bear in mind that she is prolific on social media. All of that stuff is being harvested by AIs, and the old Cambridge Analytica team has been put together by Donald Trump for his 2020 campaign run, and I suspect that we will have very specifically targeted dark emails or Facebook posts sent to those users of AOC's social media accounts by Team Trump, Team Cambridge Analytica, Team Pascali. Brad Pascali is the guy running that. Now, in addition to the very suspicious fake Facebook account, bear in mind the prominent role of Peter Thiel in Facebook, there was a murder of a young University of Iowa college student named Molly Tibbetts that was allegedly committed by an illegal immigrant named Christian Rivera, R-I-V-E-R-A, from Mexico. Now, he has been charged in the murder. However, he has no memory of the killing because he blacked out. And it turns out that Mr. Rivera was present on in Yarrabee Farms, which was owned by prominent Republicans in Iowa. In AFA program number 9 and in subsequent broadcasts about the assassination of Robert Kennedy, we spoke about the mind control that was apparently set upon Saran Saran, the patsy in the RFK assassination. And the situation vis-a-vis Christian Rivera and Molly Tibbetts is reminiscent of, it certainly calls to mind, the polka dot dress girl and Saran Saran from an uncompact Daily Mail article. Prominent Iowa Republican family which owns farm where Molly Tibbetts' alleged killer worked say he passed government's migrant background check as the 24-year-old is charged with her murder after admitting to, quote, chasing her down while jogging, unquote, by Ben Ashford, Chris Pleasance, Jennifer Smith, and Hannah Perry. Investigators say Rivera followed Molly in his dark Chevy Malibu as she went for a run around 7:30 p.m. on July 18th. He, quote, blacked out, unquote, and attacked her after she threatened to call the police unless he left her alone, officers said. Again, look, he blacked out, unquote. In other words, he had no memory of that. Was he a mind control victim? He blacked out and attacked her after she threatened to call the police unless he left her alone, officers said. It is not yet clear how Molly died. Rivera told police that after seeing her, he pulled over and parked his car to get out and run with her. Molly grabbed her phone and threatened to call the police before running off ahead. The suspect said that made him, quote, panic, unquote, and he chased after her. That is when he, quote, blacked out, unquote. He claims he remembers nothing from then until he was back in his car driving. He then noticed one of her earphones sitting on his lap and blood in the car, then remembered that he had stuffed her in the truck. He followed her and seemed to be drawn to her on that particular day. For whatever reason, he chose to abduct her, unquote, Iowa Department of Criminal Investigation Special Agent Rick Ryan said on Tuesday afternoon. Rivera stated that she grabbed her phone and said, I'm going to call the police. Well, one of the things that stands out, he blacked out, and yet some of this would appear to have occurred while he was blacked out. Again, he was drawn to her. That sounds very much like Saran Saran and the polka dot dress girl, something of a mystery, as we know. Someone who he was subsequently under hypnosis, recall, was a woman who was to whom he was drawn and who appears to have been involved in administering a physical cue, which then cued him to begin firing blanks at Robert Kennedy. Rivera said he then panicked and he got mad and that he blocked his memory. One more time. Rivera said he then panicked and he got mad and that he blocked, unquote, his memory, which is what he does when he gets very upset and doesn't remember anything after that until he came to an intersection. And this is who was in charge of the farm that employed Christian Rivera. The prominent Republican family which owns the farm where Molly Tibbetts' alleged killer worked have insisted that he passed background checks for migrant workers. Christian Rivera, who was from Mexico, was charged with first-degree murder on Tuesday after leading police to a cornfield where Molly's body was dumped. Dane, D-A-N-E, Lang, co-owner of Yarrabee Farms, along with Eric Lang, confirmed that Rivera had worked there for 4 years and was an employee, quote, of good standing. Bain's brother is Craig Lang, former president of the Iowa Farm Bureau Federation and the Iowa Board of Regents, and a 2018 Republican candidate for State Secretary of Agriculture. That same day, by the way, in Charleston, West Virginia, by the way, the home of the National Alliance, we'll come to that shortly, President Donald Trump chirped in during his Tuesday address at a rally in Charleston, West Virginia, blaming immigration laws for Molly's death. Quote, you heard about today with the illegal alien coming in very sadly from Mexico, he said, and you saw what happened to that incredible, beautiful young woman. Should have never happened illegally in our country. We've had a huge impact, but the laws are so bad. The immigration laws are such a disgrace. We are getting them changed, but we have to get more Republicans. Governor Kim Reynolds of Iowa complained about the broken, unquote, immigration system that allowed a, quote, predator, unquote, to live in her state. And again, I suspect that the murder of Molly Tibbetts and the possible mind control of Christian Rivera, like the fake Facebook account that generated the illegal migrant campaign that was such a prominent element in the news and such a prominent propaganda football for Fox News and for Trump, are part of a PSYOP, an illegal immigrant PSYOP, and I think AOC has been manipulated in order to become part of that very same PSYOP. I would note that there is a question about how Ilhan Omar's immigration status. There has been a story kicked about that she married her brother. And the disclaimers of that are rather obvious. There is no proof. Well, there may not be any proof, and perhaps she didn't. For the right-wing media echo chamber, however, proof is not required. I also wonder, again, both Saudi and Qatari intelligence are charging or alleging in no uncertain terms that both Ilhan Omar and Ms. Tlaib are Muslim Brotherhood. It will be interesting to see if during the campaign there is, quote, proof, unquote, from either Saudi and or Qatari intelligence of Ilhan Omar's having married her brother, as she is alleged to have done. If, again, with a capital I and a capital F, such information surfaces, accurate or otherwise, you can bet that will get a huge amount of media play. It will be all over the internet, all over social media. It will be interesting to see what happens when and if that should happen.
You're listening to Dave Emery's For the Record. All of Dave Emery's 36 years of work is available for download on the SpitfireList.com website. The site includes many articles not included in the programs, as well as a small library of old anti-fascist books. All of the material on the website is available for free. Sister station WFMU is podcasting the For the Record programs. To subscribe to the podcast, use the link at the top of the description for this program or on the front page.
Now, there has been a lot of focus on Mr. Crocius in El Paso, Texas, who gunned down a bunch of, allegedly gunned down a bunch of people, Mexican-Americans, and legal immigrants at a Walmart store in El Paso, Texas. And the influence of white supremacist and nativist culture on him. And I would note in that regard, and there has been, we'll talk about this in our next show or shows, or I tentatively have an interview scheduled with an author next week, so we may have to resume this in 2 or 3 weeks. But I would note that a very important legal gambit, as we looked at in For the Record 888, was effected by Glenn Greenwald, one of the darlings of the so-called progressive sector, who basically is a little more than a Nazi lawyer when one examines the substance of much of what he did, in addition to representing Matthew Hale of the World Church of the Creator. We talked about that in For the Record 888. Here is what Glenn Greenwald did vis-a-vis the National Alliance and the whole question of legal and or illegal immigrants. From the New Republic of January 19th of 2014 by Sean Wilentz, would you feel differently about Snowden, Greenwald, and Assange if you knew what they really thought? And on immigration, here is Citizen Greenwald, or Saint Greenwald as he is, to the so-called progressive sector. The parade of evils caused by illegal immigration is widely known, Greenwald wrote in 2005. The facts to him were indisputable. Quote, illegal immigration wreaks havoc economically, socially, and culturally, and makes a mockery of the rule of law, and is disgraceful just on basic fairness grounds alone. Greenwald wrote of, quote, unmanageably endless hordes of people who pour over the border in numbers far too large to assimilate, and who consequently have no need, motivation, or ability to assimilate, unquote. Those hordes, Greenwald wrote, posed a threat to, quote, middle-class suburban voters. And again, I'm going to reread this. This basically is Donald Trump, only it isn't Donald Trump. It is Glenn Greenwald, one of the darlings of the so-called progressive political sector. More about what he did in a very important case. But again, this is Mr. Wonderful, Glenn Greenwald. The parade of evils caused by illegal immigration is widely known, Greenwald wrote in 2005. The facts to him were indisputable. Illegal immigration wreaks havoc economically, socially, and culturally, and makes a mockery of the rule of law. It is disgraceful just on basic fairness grounds alone. Greenwald wrote of, quote, unmanageably endless hordes of people who pour over the border in numbers far too large to assimilate, and who consequently have no need, motivation, or ability to assimilate. Those hordes, Greenwald wrote, pose a threat to middle-class suburban voters, unquote. And then in a very important case, there has been a lot of bloviating in the wake of the El Paso shooting about the need to hold various internet forums, social media, chat groups accountable for the kinds of things that they are disseminating. And yet, Glenn Greenwald was front and center in a very important civil case in which he cleared, among other groups, the National Alliance, publisher of the Turner Diaries and Hunter and Serpent's Walk, of legal complicity in attacks on some Latino day laborers. Now, an important distinction, as I have made in the past, this is not a question of the criminalization of free speech. Anyone is perfectly free to be as anti-immigrant and as vocally anti-immigrant as they wish to be. However, when one advocates for physical violence against immigrants, as the National Alliance has against its, quote, racial enemies, unquote, the book Hunter, authored by the late William Luther Pierce, is intended as a blueprint, a manifesto for lone wolf, leaderless, resistance, racist killers. The Turner Diaries, about which we will have more to say in a minute, is also intended as sort of a how-to manual. Both, however, are works of fiction or novels. Now, again, what Greenwald did here was not to combat the criminalization of free speech. Rather, what he did was to run legal interference for groups like the National Alliance and for documents like the Turner Diaries or Hunter for civil liability, not criminalization of free speech. People are absolutely as free, and they should be as free as they wish to be in the context of being as anti-immigrant as they wish to be. That is their right, and they have rights, absolute right to express that. However, when advocating for physical violence against those whom one dislikes, that opens one up or should have opened one up to civil liability. If you're a homeowner, you leave a rake with the teeth up on your front lawn, somebody steps on that and gets hurt, you are held liable for negligence in that regard. It is good law. And civil suits against organizations like the National Alliance for advocating violence against those whom they dislike, they have every right in the world not only to dislike them, but to express that dislike in whatever terms they wish. They should not have the legal right to advocate violence against them without fear of civil liability. But thanks to Glenn Greenwald, whose views on immigration we've just read, they have just that. From the day the bloggers won, by Eric Bollert of Salon of May 19th of 2017, of Glenn Greenwald. His work was at times political in the sense that he took on unpopular clients in free speech cases that spotlighted the practical tensions between the rights of individuals and the collective urges of the community. In 2002, he defended a strident anti-immigration group, National Alliance, in a New York civil rights lawsuit after two Mexican day workers were beaten and stabbed on Long Island by two men posing as contractors in search of laborers. The victims claimed that the anti-immigration rhetoric of National Alliance, which urged racist violence against Latino immigrants and other racial minorities, was partly to blame for the beatings. Greenwald argued that the case represented a misguided attempt to impose liability and punishment on groups because of their political and religious views. A federal judge threw out the case. More from the First Amendment Center of September 16th of 2002. Anti-immigrant groups can't be held liable for attack. And skipping down. Israel Perez and Magdaleno Estrada can still pursue civil rights claims against the two men convicted of beating them, U.S. District Judge Joanna Sabert ruled on September 13th. Skipping down. Perez and Estrada were beaten and stabbed by Christopher Slavin and Ryan Wagner in September of 2000. The pair had posed as contractors looking for day laborers. Both attackers were convicted of attempted murder and sentenced to 25 years in prison. Skipping down. The newspaper also reported that the lawsuit claimed that the philosophy of white supremacist organizations, including the West Virginia-based National Alliance and American Patrol in Sherman Oaks, California, urged racist violence against Latino immigrants and other racial minorities. And Glenn Greenwald then said, the lawsuit was a very dangerous attempt to start imposing liability and punishment on groups because of their political and religious views. Glenn Greenwald, a Manhattan attorney representing the National Alliance and other groups, was quoted by Newsweek as saying, if you can be liable for the actions of other people who hear your views, then you would be afraid to ever express any views that were ever unconventional. Well, this is misdirection. Again, one has every right in the world to be as anti-immigrant as one wishes and to express that in as vehement terms as one wishes, but it is when you advocate for violence against those whom you dislike that you should be open to civil liability or subject to civil liability for advocating harm. There has been a lot of discussion about forums like 4chan and other chat groups and how they should now be held liable for allowing things like the, or empowering things like the El Paso shooting. But it was Glenn Greenwald who ran legal interference for that. And of the liberalist resistance strategy, and we're not going to have time to get into this as much as we would like. There is an article in The Atlantic that I will excerpt very briefly. This from August 7th of 2019 by J. M. Berger, B-E-R-G-E-R. The strategy of violent white supremacy is evolving. And it talks about the liberalist resistance strategy, and then skipping down, we'll go into this at greater length. Speaking of Louis Beam, who was connected to the order and was influenced by the Turner Diaries, more about that. Then came the Internet. Bean's original conception of liberalist resistance required widely distributed, quote, newspapers, leaflets, computers, etc., to spread extremist ideologies and loosely synchronize the activities of liberalist, quote, phantom selves, unquote, by signaling the time and type of the required action. While white supremacists certainly generated enough of this material, thousands and thousands of pages produced fairly consistently over the course of decades, virtually no one saw it. and then skipping down. While these forums provided some continuity in the movement during the years that followed the Oklahoma City bombing, they were not engines of growth. Open social media platforms changed the game. Yes, they did. Skipping down again. Less prominent platforms, including 4chan, 8chan, and Gab, made space for more extreme white supremacists who couldn't color within the lines of major social media platforms' rules. By the way, I would note that the web architect for the Daily Stormer, Andrew Auernheimer, who also is very much linked to the Macron hacks, was a guest at Glenn Greenwald and Laura Poitras' party, in which they celebrated their receipt of the prestigious Polk Award as well. And Auernheimer is no stranger to this kind of thing. Skipping down again in that Atlantic article, the jury is still out as to whether the current iteration of the strategy can be considered truly leaderless or truly a resistance movement. On the leadership front, many of the recent attacks are fully self-directed in the sense that no evidence has emerged that the perpetrators are taking orders from any one person. But a host of other influences are easier to detect. In place of leaderless resistance, we seem to be witnessing distributed leadership, as 2019's manifesto writers suggest. The manifestos themselves offer a form of direction, and the three key examples, Christchurch, Poway, and El Paso, all followed the same vector of introduction. The documents were posted to 8chan, where a community of bloodthirsty boosters encourage imitators by lionizing previous killers, rating them for the quality of their manifesto writing and their high body count, or their body count, quote, high scores. Now, I would note, and we're going to go into the Turner Diaries put out by National Alliance now and at greater length in a future show. One of the things that just amazes at one level and infuriates me about the so-called progressive sector is how they really cannot do anything but react to what fascist elements do, except in exactly the way the fascist elements want them to do it. Fascists are railing against illegal immigration, so you have Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders saying we should decriminalize illegal entry into the U.S. That is just what the far right wants. And now in the wake of Dayton and El Paso, there are renewed calls for gun control. Well, confiscation of guns, although they're not confiscating them, this will be propagandized that way in the far right. That is how the uprising by the Nazi element in the Turner Diaries begins, from the Turner Diaries, Chapter 1. September 16th, 1991. Today, it finally began. After all these years of talking and nothing but talking, we have finally taken our first action. We are at war with the system, and it is no longer a war of words. I cannot sleep, so I will try writing down some of the thoughts which are flying through my head. It is not safe to talk here. I've been keyed up and on the move all day, but at the same time, I'm exhilarated. We have finally acted. How long we will be able to continue to find the system, no one knows. Maybe it will all end tomorrow, but we must not think about that. Now that we have begun, we must continue with the plan we have been developing so carefully ever since the gun raids 2 years ago. What a blow that was to us and how it shamed us. All that brave talk by patriots, quote, the government will never take my guns away, unquote, and then nothing but meek submission when it happened. On the other hand, maybe we should be heartened by the fact that there were still so many of us who had guns then, nearly 18 months after the Cohen Act had outlawed all private ownership of firearms in the U.S. It was only because so many of us defied the law and hid our weapons instead of turning them in that day that the government wasn't able to act more harshly against us after the gun raids. We'll take this up at greater length again in the future. Again, although no one has proposed confiscating weapons, once again, the frankly pathetic so-called progressive secular saying we've got to do something about the guns. In Switzerland, they have a military reservist system in which every able-bodied man undergoes reserve training and keeps his service weapon, a selective fire weapon capable of semi-automatic or automatic fire, in their home at the ready. Switzerland does not have this problem. It is not the presence of firearms or even automatic weapons per se. It is what is being disseminated in this society that is producing the violence, and Glenn Greenwald has helped to see to it that there will be no civic liability. Something else we will take up at greater length. Ironically, from the Bellingcat blog of March 15th of 2019 by Robert Evans, they have been apologists for the fascists in Ukraine, talking about the Christchurch, New Zealand shooter, Brenton Tarrant, S... posting inspirational terrorism and the Christchurch mosque massacre. At multiple points in the manifesto, the author expresses the hope that his massacre will spur further attempts at gun control in the United States, which he believes will lead to gun confiscation and a civil war. And I would note from the New York Times of March 27th, Ukraine's ultra-right increasingly visible as election nears, talking about indications that Brenton Tarrant was linked to the Azov battalion in Ukraine. We will take this up at greater length in a future program. However, this concludes For the Record program number 1084, The Turner Diaries, Leaderless Resistance, and the Internet. This is being recorded on August 20th of the year 2019. I'm Dave Emery. Have fun.